The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Now it's time to turn our attention over to the Minister of Rural Development and Local Government. The Honorable Khadija Amin is on the phone with us this afternoon. Ms. Amin, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, and good afternoon to all your listeners.
And it's always a pleasure to chat with Ms. Khadija Amin. Such a burst of bubbly energy when you speak to Ms. Amin. She's always bright-eyed and always ready to assist and help in any way that she possibly can. With that being said, we want to turn our attention right now. We got a story coming down where, I think it was in this morning's paper, where the story broke on you rechanneling resources over to taking care of a flood. And it broke on page 8 of our Guardian this afternoon, where Amin orders urgent use of resources to clear drains, prevent floodings. We are not just talking, we are acting. Let's talk a little bit about what you inherited. And there's a nice picture with you standing there on one of the excavators out there in Shogonas. You're not easy. You're just getting right into the thick of things, Miss Amin.
Yeah, we hit the ground running. I have been in local government for most of my life. I was a local government councillor. I was the chairman of a Tunapuna Piako Corporation and later advisor to the Minister of Local Government. And in opposition, the political leader had all of us shadow various ministries, and I shadowed local government. So for the past 10 years, I have closely examined the financial statements, the programs and policies and activities of the Ministry of Local Government. So now that I am the minister, it is just a matter of getting things done.
You know, often or not, we'd hear about square pegs and wrong holes. You seem to be one that was placed in such a given the portfolio of Ministry of Local Government and Rural Development. This seems to fit right up your alley, as you mentioned. You were the chairman of the Tunapuna Piako Regional Corporation, and that's where I first met you many years ago when you had just entered the political realm and got into the thick of things. Now, when you inherited this ministry, you know, what were some of the challenges or some of the things that you see forthcoming that you need to address with urgency?
Well, I can tell you that the PNM really abused and cheated the regional corporations. Over the past 10 years, I have observed where they have been systematically undermined. Their funding has been suppressed, where even when we make approval to the budget, they don't ever receive their full allocation. And then they are chastised for not doing the work that they should do when they have not been receiving the funding and the staffing as well. There are a lot of HR issues. But at the end of the day, people in every regional corporation expect delivery, they expect service. And so it is my intention that as we start, we begin with the low-hanging fruit, and the hurricane season is due to start shortly. And therefore, while over the last few years we've had experienced a lot of flooding in almost every region, we have the data as to the areas that are most affected. You have the South Oroput River Basin, the Karen River Basin, the North Oroput River Basin, the Kaparo Valley, and a number of other areas as well. Now, in those areas, the regional corporations, some of them do not have the required equipment to go in and clear all the local drains. So what I have done, with this flood mitigation exercise, it's two-pronged. One is clearing the water courses, and the second is boosting up the shelters in those areas. So yesterday we launched the flood mitigation arm of it, and what it entails is pooling the resources of all the regional corporations in addition to the other agencies that fall under the ministry, so that they will have equipment to go in and clear the water courses that are the most problematic. I have also spoken with Minister Jolene John, who has an intense group for the major water courses such as the Karen River, the Oroput River, and so on, to clear those water courses, to restore the bank, and to deal with the floodgates, the faulty floodgates, and so on. So that will also bring some relief the Minister of Agriculture, Honorable Ravi Rathiram, was also present at our launch, because one other arm which falls under him is the seeing about the water courses that are within the agriculture areas. Mm-hmm. They also have several ponds and floodgates in those areas that would have an impact on floods in the agriculture areas, where our farmers, when they are flooding out, it sends up food prices, and it costs thousands or millions of dollars in losses. So our objective is to mitigate, lessen the flood, and I know that 10 years of neglect cannot be corrected in 2 months, but our intention is to do as much as we can before the heavy rains come. And so every regional corporation will be involved. At the launch yesterday, we had the official launch, but what we also had was a working session with our various regional corporations, all our public health officers, because the management of those drainage issues fall under the public health in the corporation. We had our technical officers. We had our disaster management units as part of that exercise. And in that working session, we would have outlined which corporations are going to be paired with which corporation, schedule in terms of where we're going to start. So we have a list of water courses. We have a list of equipment that will be assigned. And we have made a schedule in terms of what days we are dealing with what water channels. So I will be visiting on site with the chairman of those regions, the relevant members of parliament, as well as the technical officers, because today we are putting everything in place. Yesterday we inspected the equipment and we spoke to the drivers and operators, as well as their supervisors, their seniors, who will be coordinating, so that by tomorrow morning, equipment will be on the ground. And so because tomorrow we have cabinet, on Friday morning very early, I will be in Sandy Grande region, where work will be ongoing. In fact, work will start in every region by tomorrow morning. And on Friday, I visit Sandy Grande, as well as in most likely the one in Tunapuna region will be in the Bamboo settlement area. As you know, Bamboo has been severely affected by flooding. Mm-hmm. So we will be on the ground visiting them. The other aspect of this exercise in preparation for the hurricane season is to boost our shelters. Now, I can tell you that over the last few years, there is a list of shelters that ODPM pays a lot of money to advertise, full-page ads, colored ads, and they tell you which are the shelters. What is missing is that connect, because some of these shelters have not been inspected. There are shelters listed, for instance, community centers that are pigeon-infested and not suitable for use. And because of that, people on the ground have resorted to using churches, temples, masjids, and making do. So we have to update the list of shelters, select those that are in the most vulnerable areas, and standardize what we do in each shelter. This ad hoc usual way of doing things, where when you need a shelter, you're scrambling. We want to fix that. So I have asked that we identify the priority shelters. We cannot do all, but we are taking those that are in the most vulnerable flood areas. We are going to identify volunteers who will be shelter managers and train those shelter managers. We are going to also have standard operating procedures in terms of when a shelter is activated, who does what. I want lists. What is going to be sent to each shelter? We have a warehouse. The Ministry of Rural Development has a warehouse. They would have purchased a number of things, and they would have had a lot of things donated as well by international organizations and so on. And those things include cots and blankets and other things that you would use in the shelter. what I have observed, because when they have flood, I am out there. I am representing flood victims. I am in the flood water, and I can't get my shelter activated. I have to depend on donations and the goodness of citizens to get basic things like mattresses, food stuff, water, and all these things for the shelter. So we will now have a standard list of items, including the number of each item that will be immediately dispatched from our warehouse to each shelter. What I have also considered is having a warehouse in north and a warehouse in south. So it's easier to transport these items rather than bringing everything from Port of Spain to reach Rio Claro and Pinal and all these regions that are very far off. So we have also put in the transport systems in place to deliver these items immediately, so that when shelters are activated, this fixed list of items will be delivered immediately. And after, if they need additional to supplement based on the volume of people at the shelter, we can also do that. And what we will have as well is food stuff has been a challenge, because you cannot store simple things like bread and cheese to make a little cheesecake sandwich for people. So we will have the procurement done and have supermarkets or mini-marts that are close to the shelters engaged, so that when the shelter is activated, a pre-approved list of foodstuff will go to that shelter. Now, some shelters have the capacity to cook and prepare meals. Some do not. And depending on the needs there, we will have a pre-approved grocery list, so that when the shelter is activated, we don't have to start the procurement process, which might take some days. So immediately you will have food, water, beds, blankets, and other emergency items, including first aid kits and so on, at the shelters. And what we also recognize is that culturally, many people do not like to leave their homes, even when they are marooned. If they have an upstairs, they stay upstairs and wait for the water to subside. But they also often need warm meals, hot meals, medication, and other supplies. We must have a system to deliver those. So items will go to designated shelters or regional corporation offices, and the appropriate transport must be identified, because not every vehicle could go into those flooded areas sometimes. We also have 8 dinghies and trucks, and these dinghies will be used to rescue persons, but also to take supplies in to people who are marooned. But the system to deliver has largely been based on volunteers. And not all the time volunteers may be available as we need them. So while we will continue to engage our volunteers, the existing staff at all regional corporations, the disaster management unit, will coordinate to ensure that they have specific duties to attend to. Who is going to dispatch the boats? Who is going to operate the boats? We have already started training operators for those boats, and we will continue to ensure that we don't have 8 drivers, but that we have additional extra person to operate those boats. So I have increased the number of persons who will be trained to operate those boats, so that those boats are to be used for rescue as well as to deliver items. We know that the Coast Guard and other agencies usually step in, so we have some collaboration with them. But I must not depend on them. Regional corporations must not be waiting for somebody from the Defense Force to come to drive their boat. So I want in-house for every corporation to be ready to respond in the way that they should. Mind you, we are working to mitigate the flood, but we are also preparing for worst-case scenario, because those major water courses, I'll tell you, I am the Member of Parliament for St. Augustine, and the Carony River is the southern boundary. And we experience a lot of flooding in the Carony Plain, which includes the Bamboo, Valtin, South, St. Augustine, South, Oropun. And one of the problems I have had is that in the last 10 years or so, the maintenance of the Caroni River has been so poor that there are several places where the bank has broken down almost completely. You have a lot of erosion, and farmers just see water just flooding their garden from the bank, from the river. What we also have is such a huge buildup of silt in some of those rivers. The river mouth, Caroni River mouth, is so high with silt that in the low tide, a person could walk across the Caroni River mouth. Boats, fishermen get troubles for their boats to come in and go out because of the height of the sandbanks there. So those things require special equipment that fall under the Ministry of Works, the Drainage Division, and Ms. John has given her undertaking to immediately attend to those. So I am very confident that we could work to mitigate or to lessen the floods. And I am also certain that this immediate intervention, while it is geared towards lessening the flood, we may still have some floods because the amount of work that we have to do based on the 10 years of neglect. So that is really what the program entails, and we have hit the ground running. So we're going to clear water courses, we're going to boost our shelters, and I am going to be on the field. I am going to be visiting sites where water courses are being cleared. I am going to be visiting shelters, visiting disaster management units. I also have to attend to their staff shortages, as well as their equipment shortages. And one of the things that I see as key is to connect all that the technical people are doing with the public. So, for instance, corporations and ODPM would have spent a lot of money advertising on newspaper and radio and national media. But the communities, the target audience, may not be fully aware. So part of our standardizing the operations of shelters includes now advertising within the catchment area that is affected in terms of where the shelter is and what the procedure will be. So people in the community who are usually affected by flooding will know what will happen in a time of flooding. We cannot guarantee that every person in a flood-prone area will see in the newspaper an ad that goes out to the national population. We must also have boots on the ground beforehand in terms of home visits, walkabouts in communities, sharing public information on disasters and shelters. We must have proper signage. Many of these shelters don't have signage. So we must have proper signage to each shelter. What we have also, there's also a proposal on my desk for 100 cameras to be installed in flood-prone areas, and that will allow real-time monitoring of water levels so that we could warn persons beforehand. What happens now is that they know the areas that we use as markers. There are markers placed. If you ever drive through certain areas, you will see something looking like an enlarged measuring tape, and you will see the graduations there so that you can tell, you know, what level the water has reached. If it's 3 feet, 6 feet in those areas, and they use that as a system to warn. But it requires somebody to go out on the field and look to see what the water level is. What we would like to do is to have these 100 cameras installed so that from our command center, we could look at any camera and see what the water level is at any given time, 24 hours. I am awaiting approval for funding for that. But in to support that, you know, sometimes technology fails. We must have people on the ground who in real time could call and say the water level has reached X, Y, or Z.
This is beautiful information. One tend to wonder if in the last administration, if these things like the dinghies and all these things was in place, these shelters, from time to time, you see the former minister and, you know, coming out, giving us information. We can't always articulate the weather. Sometimes we cater for one amount of rainfall and then we get more.
So, right. So what I have experienced is there are instances of purchase of equipment and materials. There's a huge warehouse. You have millions of dollars in equipment there. My experience as a, I want to say from a flood victim's perspective, is that there's a disconnect. The disaster managers, the shelter managers, the volunteers who are out there, the elected representatives, do not know what is available and what role they can play. So when water hit Bamboo and people water to their window, and Calpo, who does Karen Bird Sanctuary tours, has to bring his boat first for myself and Councillor Sima to be taking people out of their homes when the ministry has dinghies. Who knows that the ministry has dinghies? Who has assigned these dinghies? Who is operating the dinghy? So it is now to connect and ensure that resources reach the ground. So that's
understand.
Why we will continue to work with our volunteers. We must facilitate the equipment and material that the government taxpayers money by reaching the people who are in need in a timely manner. So the engagement, the training of shelter managers, involving our counselors who are the first responders on the ground in many instances, engaging them so that we will know where to dispatch equipment, but we must also have a standard. What are we dispatching? Who is giving the approval? We must have pre-approved lists of what each area would need for immediate startup to activate these shelters.
And I want to tell you thank you very much. I mean, you have outlined a comprehensive plan in terms of getting things done. Two things come into mind while you were speaking. I was paying attention. One, we are currently operating, according to the Prime Minister, in a deficit. We are in the red, as it were, with funding. We have two ministries exhausted to the tune of $570 million, and being the red where that is concerned, still owing suppliers, etc. What about funding for you to execute this well-thought-out plan that you plan to roll out and that you have currently engaged in? And two, the Port of Spain area. Let's look at City Gate. Let's look at the Beetham estate right on the bus route there by Coconut Growers Association. You see that stagnated or stagnant water, that, boy, I don't even want to fall in there by accident. Yeah. You know, what plans are afoot? Because we see what happens if a drizzle takes place in Port of Spain. Massive flooding in front of City Gate and areas where persons are marooned and they can't get across. There's no traveling. Then you're looking down further eastward. If you're heading east from City Gate by those buildings, by John Towers up there, there's flooding there. So what plans are afoot? So we're talking about finances for you to execute this plan, that hurricane season is on our doorstep in a few weeks. The Met Office will probably signal the start of the rainy season. How are you going to get funding from government to supplement those things? And what plans do you have in the very, very early future to mitigate and get in on the ground to deal with the flooding in the City Gate area?
Right. So let me deal with the second item first, which is the flooding in our capital city, Port of Spain. I have heard so many ministers under the last government promise that flooding in Port of Spain will be a thing of the past.
So true.
It is not a simple, straightforward solution, and there are several agencies who are going to be involved. I had a brief conversation with the mayor of Port of Spain and the mayor of Diego Martin yesterday at our launch. I will be visiting them, but in the Port of Spain area, for instance, many of those issues fall under the Ministry of Works. Because you have the highway, you have the water courses that cross under the highway, and you have several pumps and floodgates in those areas to prevent the high tide from coming in and what seems to prevent the water from flowing out into the ocean. And the Ministry of Works Drainage Division has that responsibility. So it is my intention, just as I have already started conversations with the Minister of Works, that we will engage the Port of Spain Corporation and specifically look at those problematic areas. I have full confidence that the solutions, the technical solutions exist, and that the political will to get it done is now here. Indigo Martin, there are some water courses that have challenges, but they also have a lot of areas that are prone to landslips. They also do have a very well-equipped disaster management unit, and that disaster manager has been quite effective in communicating with the stakeholders there. They have been doing sensitization in schools as well, and I intend to continue my conversation with them in the very near future. So part of this is, of course, I'm visiting on the field where the equipment will be working, but I also will be visiting corporations and their disaster units, because they have identified the problematic issues, they have identified solutions, and what I will meet with them now is to further discuss the details of how we are going to step by step get the solutions, get it done. So a lot of people use a lot of buzzwords concerning local government, and you know, I am really about getting the job done, and I do believe in working closely with our stakeholders, our regional corporations, our volunteers. So we will do that. The challenge of funding. The last government really mismanaged things on a national level and at every level. Many new ministers are encountering votes that have been totally expended, where the balance is zero or they are in the red. They have left ministries in debt. They have used state enterprises to do a lot of political work. And when I look at the spending and I see where their priority was spending, their largest spending. So, for instance, in the ministry, I would have observed under one program, huge sums being spent. It's listed as Princeton Regional Corporation, but it's Maruga Tableland constituency. So they would have to suffer the rest of the country and channel all the funding to the marginal seats because they were fighting an election, to the detriment of the rest of the country. And we have to correct that. We the priority must be based on need, based on urgency of situation, based on vulnerability, whether it is flooding, poverty alleviation, education, national security. It must be based on need. So the situation in many of these agencies as well as ministries is also that they use a lot of funding to do election hiring. And we are seeing loads of persons who are employed doing various things, and there is no money to continue paying these people because they would have maxed out the votes to employ people for election. You know, but it is my intention to for us to regularize that, and with me, together with the permanent secretary, we are utilizing the available resources for this flood mitigation exercise. We do not have within the program hiring private equipment, for example. What we are doing is utilizing government-owned assets such as excavators, backhoes, trucks, etc. And we are utilizing those. We will also depend on other ministries for equipment and the distribution of things for the shelter. These are things we already have in storage that has been sitting there for years in some instances and not being utilized. So it is about maximizing what we do have until we are in a position, a better financial position. Because the economic recovery of Trinidad and Tobago is a top priority for our government and our Prime Minister.
One person is saying to me on WhatsApp this morning, Madam Minister, I like your approach for prevention, which is better than a cure. One person is saying, welcome to the new minister. And of course, Port of Spain didn't want any change. They like the flooding. Now they recognize that change is necessary. And then another one says, hi, Davey, can the minister deal with the issues? Well, I think we just answered that question as well. So as it goes, as we go further afield now, we look at those areas in Port of Spain, especially in the Citygate area. You know, I know you mentioned that there are plans afoot and you plan to meet with various stakeholders, but what sort of research was done? And I go back to that Coconut Growers Association drainage area there. I'm using Coconut CGA to give people an idea as to where it is. All right. What sort of research has been done thus far for you to see, for us in Trinidad, when we're coming down the highway or heading east, to see that water course flowing?
No, I will tell you, we are not operating Vikivike. The information in terms of the priority water courses to be cleared comes from the regional corporation's mm-hmm. records of areas that are most prone to flooding. That's one. Secondly, there are a number of studies that would have been done over the years that are still very relevant. So, for instance, you had the Caroni River Basin study. You had the South Oroput River Basin study. Within these studies, the data would have informed on projects that should be done, and they include retention ponds, floodgates, river banks, water channels to be cleared, construction of new drains and crossings under roadways such as the Eastern Main Road, the Southern Main Road, the Churchill Roosevelt Highway. And those projects are listed in those studies. These are technical studies that were done by consultants from 2010 coming forward. And those are still very, very relevant. A lot of the flooding in the Caroni Plains, for instance, is caused by fast runoff from the hills. Mm-hmm. And when we look at flooding along the Eastern Main Road, what is happening north of the main road? You have a lot of building development. You have a lot of areas that were previously natural land that are now covered, and therefore the seepage of water, rainwater, is not as much as it was. The runoff is much faster. So our proposals for retention ponds would be something we will look at in the medium and long term. But I saw that right now this flood mitigation program is a 2-month intense program, and it would not cover retention ponds, for instance. But these studies is what would inform us about what we have to do to reduce flooding in the short, medium, and long term. So it is not just where an MP or councillor tells me this area is flooding.
Mm-hmm,
we have holistic studies, technical studies, including the flooding in Port of Spain area. Solutions have been identified. The funding for this is what we will also have to identify. Now, apart from government funding, there are international agencies where funding is available, and we are also exploring applying for funding for certain projects. And these projects must meet strict requirements in terms of being in line with the Sustainable Development Goals, for instance. So where it affects the environment and so on. So we have discussed that in the beginning of this program, so that later on we will be having conversations with our regional corporation planning officers.
Indeed.
So that when we identify projects from these studies, technical studies, proper things, when we identify projects to be done, we can apply for funding in the proper way, whether it is government funding, loan funding, or international funding.
Indeed. So, and I'm glad you mentioned international. I'm not cutting you. Let's take a quick call. Hello, good afternoon. All right. As you mentioned international funding, to the Madam Minister, I just had it here a few moments ago. Right. I believe that the partnership government previously collaborated with Netherlands regarding flood relief management. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, there was a lot of collaboration and a lot of recommendations and a lot of technical studies, engineering solutions presented. The thing is, it's not possible to do all those projects immediately.
Right.
So we have to decide in terms of priority and do them on a phased basis with a program, whether it is 5 years or 10 years, and when we will complete them. And of course, there are so many other priorities, because almost every sector has been neglected and mismanaged. So I am aware that we will not be able to do everything one time, which is why I'm not promising that you will have an immediate stop to all flooding. You know, this is a flood mitigation and flood reduction. And then, as I say, as we go along, I will announce for certain things, projects such as retention ponds, construction of bridges and other water courses, and so on that will lead to flood relief.
All right. Would you be interested in at least grabbing two calls at least before you depart? All right. Let's take a voice note here quickly.
Hello and good afternoon, Davey. And congratulations to the new MP. What I would like to know, will the UNC have any room for public consultation, or do the minister have any reservation for any person in the public who would like to bring their idea forward? Would you take that in consideration? Have a good day.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for that person. As you would be aware, even in opposition, we have had several consultations. In fact, for the past probably 8 years or so, even before I was MP in 2020, mm-hmm. we had 3 budget consultations with the public in every constituency. In some cases, we did it by region, working with the regional corporations. So we have had consultations by regions, by constituencies. In the lead up to the election as well, we had public town hall meetings on various topics. So, for instance, we had topics such as public health, justice, social welfare, education, and several other sectors where stakeholders or interested persons would have attended and given their views. They would have given solutions. And what we did, for instance, in the pre-budget consultations, we took people's comments and compiled them, separated them by sector. And we included that in our budget response in Parliament so that the people's voice was heard in the Parliament and put on record with their recommendations or their where they were condemning certain measures. So that approach, the UNC has always been that people-centered, and we will continue with that approach. I have indicated my intention to engage with several stakeholders, and many of them are volunteer groups and organizations. We have retired persons who want to offer their expertise and give information. But in terms of engaging the public, that is a standard approach of the UNC government, of the UNC as a whole, and all of us as ministers will continue with that approach. So we will see in the future town hall meetings, for instance, on specific issues. You know, sometimes you have one town hall meeting and many issues come up. But when we do it by sector, it is more focused and solution-oriented. So, yes, you will continue to see that sort of engagement and consultation from the government.
And I thank you for that response. I take another call quickly. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, David, and good afternoon to the Honourable Minister. My good question afternoon. To the Honourable Minister. Yes, my question, in the last budget, you were allocated, the ministry was allocated $1.7 billion. I want you to tell us how much of that goes into recurring expenditure. And number two, can you tell us, in terms of the flood mitigation by the previous administration, because I have been traversing throughout the country, and I am seeing a lot of the major water courses have been cleared. There must be a number in terms of 15, 20, 25, 30. I know last year in the budget they would have presented it close to 500 in terms of clearing water courses. Can you give us that number? And that will be should be readily available in terms of the ministry.
All right. Thank you very much for your question.
Yes, and I would have earlier in our discussion here that over the past few years I would have closely monitored the votes in terms of the allocation given under local government, given to every regional corporation, given to CPEP, RDC, and what they have been using the monies for. In the Standing Finance Committee for the past 5 years, the past 4 budgets, I would have been very involved and very vocal in terms of where the money allocated and what it is being utilized for. One of the areas you had, for instance, was the paving of secondary roads that initially you had $100 million allocated to that special purpose company. They did nothing, and then they transferred the company to the Ministry of Works with an additional $100 million. bringing it to $200 million allocated for secondary roads. And very few roads were paved, and then you end up with bubble and corruption in the company. And that remains under the Ministry of Works. But of course, time will reveal where the money went. In case of water courses being cleared, there is a lot of recurrent work that would have been done. There are millions of dollars spent under development, the development program, PSIP funding. And the question for me is, how does that affect citizens in a positive way? If you have millions of dollars being spent on the St. Joseph River and Bamboo and Valsin still flooding, let me talk. Let us talk about what impact it has on citizens' lives, so that some of these programs, while they have spent millions of dollars, have to be reviewed, and you have to ensure that it really is targeted in terms of solution.
Thank you very much.
In terms of the allocation to the ministry, there are a lot of very questionable spending that would have taken place over time with the minister's approval. And my intention is to work with what we have now. And we have mid-year review coming up. The Minister of Finance will spearhead that. And then we have a new budget coming for the citizens and for the nation, which we will still have to work with the limited national revenue for that budget. But a big part of our drive as a government is to identify new streams of revenue and to be innovative in how we fund the projects as we go forward. So you will hear more about those things from the government.
And I do appreciate you answering that question there. Good day, Minister. I am from Pinal Debe region, and the former chairman, Alan Sammy, had some very good ideas with regards to flooding alleviation. However, the previous administration was in power at the time, and funds were not granted to Pinal Debe to implement this. I think these plans should be revisited within the area. Are you open to that?
Well, as a matter of fact, Dr. Sammy is my friend. Dr. Sammy is a brilliant man. He has been in local government for decades. He is always open to sharing recommendations and advice. And in fact, my last communication with him was on Sunday, where he sent me a 7-point plan for addressing flooding in Trinidad and Tobago, which focus on specific watershed management. Because climate change, of course, is exacerbating flooding. And over the past few years, there have been a lot of climatologists who would have given models that you can work with. And those are some of the things that will guide us, as I say, professionals in the field who are not necessarily government employees, who would have given recommendations. So Dr. Sammy is well-respected, and he has put forward some recommendations. So I thank you for reminding us of people like him who are interested in seeing, seeing solutions being implemented.
Indeed so. Let me take one last call here with you. Good afternoon. All right, 625-2257, 627-3223. One texter is asking about local government reform. But before we get to that, let's take this call quickly. Hello?
Hi, good afternoon, Devi, and to the Minister, Honourable Minister. Minister, do you have any intention to deal with deadbeat councillors in the country? Because you have councillors who are no show, no see at all. And in our area, like probably the Beach Choroma, Kokalma, African area, councillors are not in touch with the ground. No sight. I would say respond off air.
Thank you very much. Deadbeat councillors.
Now, councillors are the first arm of government on the ground. The performance appraisals of councillors really fall under the political party. I would have been a liaison with many of our councillors, and within the UNC, we would have certain performance indicators we would use to assess them, and we also have, in terms of training, given them certain directives for their performance. And certainly at the time for ensuring that in terms of reviewing councillors' performance has to do with when there is a local government election, every political party has the option to decide whether they're going to send a councillor back or not. Councillors are part-time. counselors are still part-time, and I would like to have counselors to be full-time, but we must do it properly. And we must also ensure that there are ways to measure their performance.
You know,
the
thing
same goes for members of parliament, of course.
Right.
And this is an issue for the political parties and not the minister to assess all the councillors.
Do you think the time has come for MPs such as yourself and persons that hold ministerial posts, again, such as yourself, to be separated and apart from? I mean, you have this, you are not just minister for the St. Augustine community only. You are minister for Trinidad and Tobago, with plans afoot very much so to deal with flood-prone areas within Trinidad and, of course, on the sister isle of Tobago with any disaster that hits. What about the time come for MPs to be members of parliament for an area but not necessarily be able to hold a ministerial portfolio? Because once you become a minister, your scope is broadened. You're no longer just an MP for an area, but I consider you to be an MP for the entire country, because you know, especially the different ministries that you are holding, you are now minister in rural development and that kind of thing. So you know, you now have moved away from just being a minister, an MP for the area,
right,
of St. Augustine.
About our time and attention.
Yes, you know. How are you going to manage your time between your constituents and that of the wider diaspora?
Well, of course, we have ministers who are senators who do not, who are not members of parliament representing constituencies, and it is a team effort. I have been a councillor in St. Augustine South since 2003. I have been an opposition councillor. I have been a government councillor. I have been an MP in opposition in the last 5 years. And I have been very much on the ground with my constituents. My constituents know and understand that now, because I have a portfolio as a minister, there will be many national things I will need to attend to. However, my commitment to my constituents will not be compromised. And, you know, personally, I am grateful for 5 years in opposition, because I spent a lot of time listening to complaints and proposed solutions, spending time visiting people such as crime victims, for instance, who will only share their story with you privately, not in a community meeting, and actually going on site to see where the banks are broken down, where the river, the floodgates are not functional, actually going on site. So that now, as a MP in government, I can very quickly send proposals, project proposals to every minister, because I've been writing ministers over the past 5 years, where you have bridges collapsing, you know, major water courses to be dealt with, schools that were built under the previous government that have been abandoned while children are cramped and pigeon-infested areas and so on. Community centers, we had a community center in Urukunde where they cut the ribbon and never come back. They turn sod and they have it barong with galvanized and nothing since. We have community centers, existing community centers that are in such state of disrepair, so that I am very familiar with my constituency issues. And I can immediately, and I've already started making representations for those to be addressed, so that the time I would have spent in the constituency just visiting people, attending sports days, attending functions, going in schools. When I visit a school, I don't just talk to the children or distribute stationery for SEA. I talk to the principal, the teachers, hear their concerns. There have been instances where they have asked me to intervene, and even though my request to the line minister may not have gotten favorable response under the previous government, I would have had to reach out to private citizens to sponsor things in schools, simple things like paint and stationary desks and so on, so that I am very familiar with the needs of the constituents. However, all of us will have office days. The parliament, when an election is called, parliament is suspended, and we are meant to set up MPs' offices My office has been located at Tajwe Main Road for quite some time. It is very central in the constituency. And so once Parliament sets up the office, I will resume seeing constituents there and being present in the constituency as I have always been. In fact, on Friday, the day after tomorrow, I have my first outreach, which is a continuation of what I've been doing in the past. And this is with TTPS. This is a special program targeted at a crime-prone area and train line where you have had a lot of what I'm told is gang-related murders. And I have been working with them, doing a lot of social work. So together with the TTPS and the officers in this special drive, we are going to visit the area. I am preparing packages with books and stationery and so on for children. So this drive is specifically for the children of the train line area in partnership with the TTPS. And in that area, we want to have a police youth club. We don't have a building for the police youth club, but they have been doing a lot of activities with the children over the past couple years. And particularly after we had so many murders in this area. And a lot of it, TTPS don't have money for that. And the MP in opposition doesn't have money for that. So a lot of corporate officers and businesses in the area have been supporting this. What I now intend to do is to petition for government funding, because many of those children are considered vulnerable, socially vulnerable. We have school dropouts. You have crime and guns and drugs and so on in the area. And there are other areas as well where we want to do remedial intervention. So even though my office is not yet functioning, my outreach programs have already started. So on Friday, I'll be out on the train line with CCTS continuing this work. And as I say, because I've been there before with them, I know we want a space for a police youth club. I know we want to have certain programs to provide employment, programs to deal with school dropouts. I know what their needs are, so I can readily advocate for them. And there are other areas as well where I have outreach planned for the constituency. So I don't see the constituency will suffer because their MP is a minister at all.
Minister Khadija Amin, we have chatted for roughly 55 minutes or so. I want to thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to chat with us here on Freedom. I mean, one person is saying, I'm a citizen of St. Augustine, her constituency, and we want to ask the MP to put some priority and take care of the area which was neglected for the past 10 years under the last administration. Yeah. Drainage, road repairs, St. Augustine South, Dookie Singh Street, and yes. Bassey Streets need some TLC. Madam Minister, we look forward to seeing you.
If you could give me 2 minutes.
Go ahead.
As we're touching on constituency. Throughout the constituency, we have land tenure issues. There is a squatter development identified in the Squatter Regularization Act at Dookie Singh Street Extension, where the regularization has to be completed and development such as putting in water mains, electricity poles, drainage, roads has to be done. And I've been in the community, so I've already put residents on standby that when the time reach, we will form a committee of residents to be part of that regularization exercise. Land tenure issue also pertains to what you call Kale Village, which is Paje South in the area near to the Sunapuna Hindu School, where those lands were part of the Bades estate many years ago, those leases need to be regularized. And these leases have been outstanding for decades. In the higher up, in the, well, east of that, you have, in the back of Blue Waters there, you have the Orange Grove estate, which are agricultural estates, 5-acre plots where farmers would have gotten leases for 20-acre plots, and those leases have been expired, and we have been trying to get them renewed for the past 10-plus years. Further south, Maloney South, which also falls in St. Augustine, also has farmers who have similar land tenure issue, but we also throughout have drainage issues where flooding and so on is concerned with our farmers. So I have already been meeting with them, and I've already sent their concerns to the minister. So we will have meetings with the farmers, meetings with the residents, specifically to address their issues. We have a number of bad, very bad roads, Centenary Extension, Dookie Singh Street, Factory Road in Piako. I have a list off the top of my head. We have several bridges that have been collapsing. So in QF, we have the Blackman Ravine on Blackman Lane. That bridge is so low that it causes a lot of flooding. On the same Blackman Ravine, south of the highway in Spring Village, the bridge is eroding so badly, I am afraid it will collapse. We also have the Dry River Bridge in St. Augustine South that I don't know how that bridge is still standing. I have been advocating, bringing media, doing social media posts. We have protested, and that is one of the priority bridges. But there are other infrastructural issues in the Curep area, a lot of drains that are very old, crossings under the bridges that obstruct water flow. And I would have gotten those complaints and visited and so on. So now we hope to get solutions. In the Piako area as well, you have, well, I mentioned a lot of bad roads, but there are opportunities for local economic development. In the Piako area, our government has spoken about aviation repairs and the aviation industry, supplying jobs for the surrounding communities. In that area, you also have a lot of hotels and other businesses that can depend on the airport that we have to deal with. In Oropun there, you had residents who were relocated when the expansion of the airport. They were placed in the first phase of Oropun Gardens, the flat houses, not the high-rise buildings. And they are yet to receive their documents, the HDC houses that they have been occupying since probably the year 2000. So we want to get them to have their documents for their houses in the high-rise buildings in Oropun there. They have not been getting water on the fifth floor for years. And, you know, there are other issues in Oropun that HDC has to address, such as repairs of the buildings, the rail, the car parks where the lighting has failed, the maintenance of the area on a whole, you know, so that all of these issues that I know off the top of my head, I will be advocating strongly for my constituents, but I will also be having community meetings before and after we are doing projects. So before a project starts, we will inform the community, allow them to have their say, you know, that kind of thing.
You know, one person is saying it's good. It's the first time I've heard a minister speak on such detail. They went on to say she knows what she's talking about and all the best wishes. So, I mean,
thank you, appreciate this.
Yeah, somebody is now saying, have a good afternoon, Madam Minister. We look forward with bated breath to see you unveil all these wonderful things. Another one says, when UNC wins, everybody wins.
Everybody wins. Everybody's winning right now, yes. I want to say, I tell my constituents, I don't want you to vote and the next time I see you is next 5 years.
Wow.
I want you to be involved in the constituency. When we have outreach, when we have projects, when we have visits in the area, I want you to be part of running the constituency. So whereas in other areas, they will tell the MP that I only see you every 5 years, I complain to my constituents who only come when it's election and they get excited, you know. So I am telling my constituents even now, that it is, I don't just want your vote. I want whenever we have any kind of community activity, sporting activity, NGO outreach, infrastructural project, that you pay an interest on behalf of your community.
And I want to say thank you very much. You are a breath of fresh air to many persons in those flood areas that look forward to these wonderful initiatives that you are about to unleash on Trinidad and Tobago. With that being said, I want to congratulate you in your ministerial post at this time. We do look forward to the next 5 years, Ms. Amin, and see how best we can develop this country. Well, yes, 10 years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah?
We'll go with that. We'll go with that. You know,
right.
We'll go with that. Thank you again. Don't be a stranger. I will be calling on you again in the not too distant future as this hurricane season unfolds with us. We would seek updates as to what is happening, especially with persons on the ground that are experiencing any sort of displacement or discomfort with the upcoming inclement weather that's before us in the not too distant future. So thanks again. And do have yourself a very spirited and wonderful afternoon. Take care.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.